We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Our guest this evening on Keeping the Faith is Courtney Ellis. Courtney Eccles is talking with us by phone from Chicago. Courtney, can you hear me all right?
I can, Steve. Hi, how are you?
Very good. And as I understand it, you're in your office in the Chicago Temple building right there across from the Picasso sculpture, if we can picture that.
I am, yes. And right now it's the Kris Kringle Mart, actually, the German Christmas market. So it's really pretty over there.
Very busy.
Mm-hmm.
You do education and advocacy for Protestants for the Common Good. Now tell us, first of all, what's Protestants for the Common Good?
Well, Protestants for the Common Good is a small, not-for-profit organization, and we are, like you said, up in Chicago. And really what we do is work with Protestant churches from around Illinois to do education and advocacy work on a wide range of issues. So, you know, we work on health care and environmental issues and income supports and a lot of different things, and really try to educate people about what's going on in Illinois and also engage them in advocacy in the legislative process.
And part of that was very exciting this last week in Springfield. Mm-hmm. How much time did you spend in Springfield over the last couple of weeks?
Well, my coworkers and I were down in Springfield 3 days last week and then 3 days before Thanksgiving, because the Illinois General Assembly was in what they call veto session the week before Thanksgiving and then the week after. So we were down there for quite some time, actually.
And you had some successes and some near successes from your perspective. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, two of the issues that we had worked on somewhat, the first was a medical cannabis bill, and that's something that I haven't done a lot of work on, but my coworkers have. And
cannabis is marijuana?
Yes, yes.
All right.
And it came up for a vote this past week, and it's required to get 60 votes in order to pass, and it came really close with 56 votes. And so the representative, who is the sponsor of the bill, pulled it at the last second for what's called postponement, and the hope is that we can do some work with a few representatives in the coming weeks, and that when the House goes back in January, that they can call the bill again and the votes will be there. So it was close, and a lot of work was done, and we're still really hopeful that something will happen. And the second issue that's actually
let's talk just a little bit about the legalization of medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. And let me remind listeners, this is a live call-in show, so if you have questions or you have comments, do join the conversation. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates from the WILL studios, punch in 333-9455 into your phone, and Cal Crow, our engineer, will take that call and put you in line to talk to our guest today, Courtney Eccles. And if it's a long-distance call, use our 1-800-222-9455 for a toll-free call. So one of the issues, Courtney, your group, the Protestants for the Common Good, was working for was the passage of the legalization of medical marijuana. Did you find that this was particularly controversial as you talked to congregations, Christian congregations across the state of Illinois?
Yes, I think it is a controversial issue. You know, there were a lot of folks who really had a lot of, I think, information and had done a lot of thinking about this before we ever talked to them, and then there were a fair number of folks who hadn't really thought about medical marijuana or medical cannabis, as the bill is called. And I think we really approach it as a justice issue, seeing this as an opportunity for a small group of individuals within Illinois who have tried so many other things to deal with extremely painful, long-lasting diseases or ailments that they have, and that this, you know, there isn't a ton of research out there right now on why medical marijuana works, but it does for some individuals. And so this is an opportunity to have a well-regulated program set into place in Illinois to give some folks a chance to try something other than a lot of the other painkillers that are out there on the market that haven't been working for them. So, you know, some folks really saw that and others didn't and wanted to know more. And we had a lot of really interesting conversations with people and have and will continue to do so in the coming months. But it is not it is a controversial issue.
And I read in the Sun Times online that your executive director, Al Sharp, had written a commentary on the issue. And I think it was there that I read that Montel Williams, who suffers from I forget which serious disease, had actually come to help try to educate people about the fact that where he lives, I think it was New York, he was able to use medical marijuana, and it just helped tremendously in terms of his relief from pain.
Yeah. He came down to Springfield, or over to Springfield, I guess, last week, and it was really powerful because in addition to him, there were a number of other patients from around Illinois who came and spoke with not only their representatives and senators, but others as well. And a number of them said, you know, we do use medical marijuana right now, and it is illegal, but we're doing it because it's the only thing that allows us to fully function on a day-to-day basis. And their testimonies were really powerful to listen to. So it's a tough issue, I think, for a lot of folks. But when you talk to somebody who has a disease or ailment that isn't going to go away and hasn't been able to function with medicine that's been legally prescribed, it really causes you to think about other alternatives that are out there.
There's some of us who feel that it would be good also to decriminalize the marijuana use completely and and have it be regulated, but not have it result in people going to prison for using marijuana, since it seems to be much less dangerous than, say, for example, alcohol, which is legal but regulated.
Mm-hmm. I think I think Protestants for the Common Good has moved in that direction as well, and we really think that medical marijuana is sort of a place to start. It's a really good. It's a small amount. It's focused on key individuals, but it allows you to have the discussion about marijuana in general and what our society, our state, our country might look like if we think about decriminalizing that drug and instead regulating it in some way. Or there are actually some municipalities, and I think Champaign is one of them, in Illinois, that instead of putting an individual in prison, they get some sort of ticket, and that's in some ways a way to decriminalize the drug itself and not end up putting in so much money and so many individuals into the criminal justice system. So there are a lot of alternatives out there, and as an organization, we're really excited about exploring them.
Actually, the city of Urbana has made that an option for the police. When they arrest someone, they can give them the option of paying a fine. The police have the option of forcing requiring a fine rather than a possible prison sentence. Mm-hmm. So it's not Champaign; it's the city of Urbana. We do have a caller. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest Courtney Eccles from Protestants for the Common Good. Yes, number one caller.
Yes, hello, Courtney.
Hello.
I'm for decriminalization, and I'm also for legalization of medical marijuana. I do have one question. I have heard that long-term use can cause paranoia. Do you know anything about this?
I don't know about that specifically. I know that it's something that has come up and been talked about, mm-hmm. and our executive director is really the individual who has done the most work on it, and when he talks about it, what he says is that when it comes to research on medical marijuana and why it actually works and how it's working, it's been extremely underfunded because it's not legal in most states. And so one of the things that this would do is allow more money to go into the research and really define what those long-term results might be.
I also want to let you know that Faith in Place is working on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Their main office is in Chicago.
We do a lot of work with them on environmental issues.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
You already know. I thought maybe you would. Okay.
No, well, thank you, though, for passing it on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. We're talking with Courtney Eccles, who works with advocacy and education for a nonprofit organization whose offices are in Chicago, but it's really spread throughout the state of Illinois in terms of congregations that are supportive and receive their very good newsletter and participate in helping to educate the legislators in their regions about the issues. And Courtney, tell us how you got involved in Protestants for the Common Good. You're a graduate of Northwestern University.
I am, yes. And I actually, while I was at Northwestern, had the opportunity to do an internship with PCG. And so during my junior year of college, came and instead of attending classes, came and worked here at Protestants for the Common Good full-time. And I had the opportunity to work with congregations, specifically on healthcare issues. And I loved my time here. I loved the staff, and I really was very moved by the mission of the organization to be involved in social justice issues, to try and educate and engage people in the civic process. And I really appreciated that they tried to look at sort of the broad systemic issues and how you can use policy to change those things. So then I was fortunate enough after college to be able to get an organizing position here working with churches, and that sort of morphed into both organizing and education work as well as policy. So I've been here about 3.5 years now.
When you were an undergraduate, what was your religious background? Why did you want to take an internship in an organization that was doing this kind of work?
Well, I was a social policy and religion major, and oftentimes people don't think those two things go together, but I guess I've always been interested in incorporating my faith into the work that I do and the things that I'm involved in. And I'm ELCA, so Evangelical Lutheran is my background and what I continue to practice. And so I thought it would be really interesting to get involved with a faith-based not-for-profit. And so I sort of looked around the city and came across Protestants for the Common Good, and there had been some other students who'd worked here previously and said it was just a great place to experience both policy and faith work at the same time. So it was unique, and I really enjoyed it.
We have another caller wanting to join our conversation again on line number one, local line one. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Courtney. I was wondering if you had heard of any research that had been done on the active ingredient in marijuana, especially being stored in the fat for about up to 3 months and chromosomal damage as a result.
I will admit that I have not heard anything because the research part was not one of the areas that I worked in. So I am not as much of an expert as some of our other staff members. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe some of our listeners may know about that. Thank you for the question.
30 years ago, there was some kind of research on humans, and the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church at that time, Ed Harris, was involved, and there was a monograph, I believe, printed. I know I read it at the main library on campus, but that's the only information I have about it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, definitely, we're always looking to gather more information about these sorts of things. And again, I think more research on medical marijuana, we would really fully encourage that to have a better understanding of the long-term effects as well as why it is that it works well mm-hmm. with some individuals and not with others.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Again, the phone numbers, if others would like to talk with our guest, Courtney Eccles, 333-9455 and 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, this program is heard not only live here on Illinois Public Media, the WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, but also online at will.illinois.edu. So if you're listening online and would like to use the toll-free number, again, that's 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-9455. Courtney, what was there was another issue that came up just this week in Springfield with the state legislature in Illinois that Protestants for the Common Good was quite interested in. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, yes, it was a very busy week in Springfield, unlike what some people sometimes say about our legislature. This past week, on Tuesday and Wednesday, the Civil Unions Bill was brought forth, first on Tuesday on the House side, and it passed with, I believe, 61 votes, 62 votes. So it was a close vote. And then the next day, the bill was heard in the Senate on Wednesday morning, or I guess early afternoon on Wednesday, and it also passed out of the Senate. So we're really just awaiting the governor's signature on the bill itself before it becomes law. But hopefully within a few, you know, he'll sign that bill within a month or so, and starting in summer of 2011, civil unions will now be legal in the state of Illinois, which PCG is really, really excited about that, along with a number of other organizations who worked so much on that bill, and so many people across the state did a lot over the last 6 years before it was finally called and voted on.
I read in the newspaper this morning that Governor Quinn did say he would sign it in January, and it would take effect in June.
Yep.
Tell us what that bill actually is about.
Sure. Well, I mean, as many could probably guess, it was also a somewhat controversial bill, but in the House, it was sponsored by Representative Greg Harris. And the way he talked about it, I will not be nearly as eloquent, but really this is not a bill that is about gay marriage. Instead, it is a bill that brings to both homosexual couples and heterosexual couples rights that married couples get in the state of Illinois. And so what it would do is allow either a heterosexual or homosexual couple to go to the clerk's office and get a civil union and then receive the rights within Illinois that married couples receive. And he talked in particular about the rights of hospital visitation and also the ability to provide your partner's last wishes if they're unable to do so themselves in the hospital. And there are a number of other benefits in terms of taxes and other things that you would get in Illinois, although it does not apply to federal taxes and that sort of thing, but really property rights. It makes it possible for individuals to have those same opportunities. And one of the things that the representative, Greg Harris, pointed out is that actually the group of individuals who might benefit from this most is heterosexual elderly couples who have previously been married and have either pensions or other financial plans that they are a part of right now, but they can get a civil union as well with a new individual and would thus have the same protections when it comes to their end-of-life decisions. So it was really exciting to be in the Capitol building on Tuesday and Wednesday and to hear the speeches of representatives and senators who supported this bill. I felt like I was watching history, and it was really exciting and moving.
And you had been a part of that history because my guess is in your educating, sharing information with congregations, and mm-hmm. they in turn letting their legislators know how they felt about this issue, you made some differences. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think we work on a lot of different issues, but there are certainly some that that the public and the legislature peg, you know, more so as a moral issue. And I certainly think that civil unions is one of those. And so there were certainly religious groups and institutions that were adamantly opposed to this legislation and were doing as much as they could in terms of phone calls and visits to prevent it from passing. And so, you know, I think conversations that we had with legislators, and I think conversations that we had with our members and our churches, that inspired those folks to call their own representatives and say, you know, I am a person of faith, but I really do believe that this is the right thing to do. I am positive that those calls made a difference. because I think it's important to remember that not every religious person has the same opinion on different issues. And so it's important to share your opinion with whomever your elected official is.
Now, the Protestants for the Common Good is clearly a progressive or liberal Christian organization. Mm-hmm. Often those voices aren't heard in the media. Often only the conservative right-wing folks are heard. Do you find it difficult to get people to listen to you?
Well, you know, that's sort of an interesting question. I think in some cases that might work to our advantage. You know, the Sun-Times article that our executive director got into the newspaper last week about medical marijuana, I think part of the reason that was printed was because here's a religious group that's speaking out on an issue that other religious groups might be really opposed to. So to some degree, we're kind of an anomaly, and that's pressworthy. But I think, you know, it's also difficult to overcome sort of a public opinion about what religious groups and religious people think about certain issues. And so, you know, sometimes you really do have to work hard against that. But for us, you know, I think a lot of what we do is work with churches in Illinois to let them know what's going on and to really engage people of faith in discussions, sometimes about really difficult and controversial issues. And the more you can talk about these things, the more people of faith start thinking about issues and are willing to speak out about them. So we hope that it gets easier and easier as time goes on, I guess.
You mentioned that when you were at Northwestern as an undergraduate, not that many years ago, 4 or 5, you were a social policy major and also a religion major. Now, mm-hmm. with the students who were in your social policy classes that you were in discussions with, were you one of the few folks there who were actively involved in a religious, traditional religious group, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, a mainline congregation? Were you one of the few voices, or were there others?
That's a really good question. I think that, you know, what I know of it is only from what I heard from other students in my class or saw in terms of what they participated in. And I would say that, in general, there were few of us who were actively engaged with a religious group or were public about our religious affiliation or our faith. I would guess that there were probably other students in my class who were religious to some degree, but there were also many who were not and were pretty vocal about those sorts of things as well. So I'm sure it was an interesting mix to be both policy-oriented, but trying to do it from a faith perspective. And, you know, some people might have agreed with that and some might not have.
As you've been going around the state of Illinois talking with various Protestant congregations, have you run across people of other religious faiths who said, well, how come your organization just works with Protestant Christians? What about us Catholics, or what about those of us who are Jews or Muslims or whatever? Do you find people who say, why are you so exclusive?
Yes, definitely. I think we ask ourselves that question every few years. You know, what does this name automatically indicate that we're excluding others? And I think that, for me at least, the answer to that is no. Where we came from was the fact that the Protestant tradition, which encompasses so many different denominations, didn't have a really active advocacy group as a whole, I guess. You know, if you look at the Catholic Church, they have a wonderful policy and advocacy group that's really active and is able to reach out and communicate with all of their churches. The Jewish tradition has a couple of organizations, at least in Illinois, that are really active when it comes to justice issues, and they do a lot of organizing work and advocacy as well. So I think we were really trying to fill a hole or fit a niche, I guess, for another voice to come into that arena and participate. And I should say that we, while the work that we do is specifically organizing Protestant traditions, we do so much work with both Jewish organizations and the Catholic Church and Muslim organizations and other faith groups as well. So I would hope that folks wouldn't think we're intentionally excluding. Rather, we focus our organizing work on a specific group of denominations.
There may be listeners throughout the state of Illinois or elsewhere who wonder how they could learn more about Protestants for the Common Good. Do you have a website?
We do. It's really easy. It's www.thecommongood.org. And they can go there. And actually, our executive director's article is up right now on the website. So if they'd like to read what he wrote about medical marijuana, they can take a look at that. And we've got some articles up on what happened with the Civil Unions Bill and lots of information about who we are and what we do and how to get in touch with us. So I would love it if folks went to visit our website.
And they can see a sample there of the newsletter, which is a wonderful resource, particularly for pastors as they prepare their sermons for the upcoming Sunday with the lectionary work that's I've really appreciated personally that Jay Wilcoxon does.
Yes.
And the articles by Larry Greenfield that are often so thoughtful and provocative. As well as Al Sharpe's, of course. We have another caller waiting again on our local line in Urbana. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead. Yes, line number one.
Yes. I was interested. I just tuned in early, not too early, but I was interested in learning that your one of your main thrusts seems to be public policy and working for people who need you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today I have become very concerned that President Obama is going to go ahead with the tax cuts for the rich, mm-hmm. rather than with the help for the unemployment. And I was wondering if your organization is taking a lead in making a statement or getting people to be aware of that and to really take a good hard look at who really needs money in this country.
Mm-hmm. That is a great question. We're a pretty small organization. There are seven of us, and only three or four of us are full-time. So while we tend to focus the majority of our work on Illinois issues, certainly there are federal issues that we can't ignore. And so we have worked with other organizations in Illinois to craft letters to our congressmen and also our two senators about what we should be doing when it comes to the tax cuts and, again, who really needs the money and what we can be using that money for. So while it's not one of the things that we are a direct leader on, we certainly try to work with other organizations and make PCG's voice known in that discussion and that debate.
Well, you certainly don't need to worry about Richard Durbin. But
no, he's in a good spot, yes.
Yes, but state or not, this is this really is a social policy issue, and it's going to affect so many people.
Oh, definitely.
I hope that your listeners, I know that you as seven people can't do everything, but you know, I do hope that listeners will take note that our President Obama might be going down with them. So I just thought I'd bring
it up. I'm really glad you brought it up because I think you're right. So the more calls that he and our other members get, the better.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. We're about halfway through our program today of Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the frequent host, the usual host of this program, although Don Nolan often is sitting in this chair at this microphone doing the same job. And incidentally, a program that he recorded earlier and was broadcast earlier this year will be using on the Sunday right after Christmas, December 26, an archive program will be replaying for those who might have missed it. It's a wonderful interview with the philosopher from the University of Chicago, Martha Nussbaum, on her new book, Not for Profit, Why Democracies Need the Humanities. I was traveling when that program was broadcast live, but was able to hear it when I returned through our podcast. We have a wonderful system here at WILL to be able to hear past programs at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. You could get that but we're going to rebroadcast that on December 26th. The weekend before, December 19, our guest on Keeping the Faith will be a live program, an interview with Joanne Fong from Philadelphia about her career going from fashion design to being a pastor. So from fashion design to the pulpit will be our topic with our guest Joanne Fong, December 19. On December 12th, that's next week, we'll be talking live to Frances Larson, an author in England. She's at the University of Durham, about her newest book called An Infinity of Things, How Sir Henry Welcome Collected the World. This is the Welcome of Burroughs Welcome Pharmaceuticals, and his life was fascinating, and she's written a very interesting biography about his amazing collections. So we'll be talking a little bit about what you learn when you start collecting various things, of actual things of the world. That'll be next week here on Keeping the Faith. Our guest today, however, is Courtney Eccles. I might spell your last name, or I'll have you do it. It's
Eccles.
There are about five different ways to spell Eccles, just like Shoemaker or Schumacher, and Eccles, Courtney Eccles, who works with advocacy and education, particularly in Springfield, Illinois, for Protestants for the Common Good. Let me give the phone numbers again for listeners who'd like to join in. Locally, Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. So if it's a local call, use that number. If it's long distance, punch in 1-800-222-9455 for a toll-free call. Courtney, tell us about some of the other groups you cooperate with when you're doing this kind of education, advocacy, lobbying on different issues.
Sure. Well, we, as I had said earlier, we're a smaller organization. There's about seven of us, and because we are a multi-issue organization, that rarely means that we are working alone. We're almost always working in coalition with other, either faith groups or secular groups here in Illinois. So one of the callers earlier had mentioned with our environmental work that we do a lot of work with Faith in Place, which is a statewide organization located in Chicago, but with a number of religious groups that they work with throughout Illinois. And a lot of the work that we do at PCG is related to economic justice. So for us, that means income supports and ensuring that individuals in Illinois have what they need to contribute within society. That's kind of our broad definition. So we'll work with Voices for Illinois Children, Heartland Alliance, a number of organizations that focus specifically on children and families, so Ounce of Prevention, Action for Children, a lot of different organizations. And then we work with coalitions as well. So there's the Egan Coalition for Payday Loan Reform, which this is sort of an aside, but after about 10 years of work, we passed payday loan legislation last year in Illinois, which was really exciting, and that was a coalition that pretty much led that effort. And we do a lot with criminal justice organizations as well as groups that do political reform and campaign finance reform. So we're kind of all over the board. If there's an issue that people are interested in, chances are we're trying to do something on it in Illinois. So it's exciting. It's really exciting.
And again, listeners could go to, on the web, thecommongood.org, and learn more about some of these issues and ways to be involved and ways to support the organization. Courtney, tell us a little bit about what Walter Boyd does for Protestants for the Common Good.
Sure. Walter Boyd is our Director of Criminal Justice Work. That's not his official title, but I can't remember it right off the top of my head. But he has a wonderful story and has been here for a number of years and focuses specifically on sort of two issues. One is diverting individuals from the criminal justice system, and then for those who are coming out of Illinois' system, working on ex-offender reentry issues. So it's sort of a goal of saying, how do we fix our system to prevent so many people from entering into it. Part of that would be diversion or rehab as opposed to incarceration, especially when it comes to drug-related crimes. And then for individuals who've come out of prison, who've paid their debt to society, what can we do to help them become contributing members within their communities that they're going back to? I mean, it was an issue that I didn't know very much about before I started working here. And the more you learn, the more you think to yourself, you know, how, if you're coming out of prison and you can't get a job and you can't get a driver's license and you can't get help to find a place to live, how in the world are you going to get back on your feet? And I think, you know, this is a really wonderful issue for people of faith to work on, because the idea is you've got folks who have paid their debt to society who want to be able to contribute again, and our system and our rules and our laws make that really, really difficult. So he spends every day of every year trying to make that better and trying to make that easier. And he's done a lot of really good things in recent years. There's been some success, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
If someone is listening and they say, there are some of these issues that I do care about, and I would like to let my legislators know about it,
mm-hmm.
What's the most effective way that they could do that?
I think, you know, I would say if you're able to just give your legislator a call. The website to look up who your elected officials are is really easy. It's www.ilga.gov. That's ILGA.gov. And it lists all the members of the House and the members of the Senate. And there's something that folks can click there that says, I think it's legislator lookup. And you just would type in your name and address, or not your name, but your address, and it'll tell you who your elected officials are. And we have found...
And also contact phone numbers, emails, so
yep.
forth.
Yeah. Addresses, district
sure.
and Springfield offices. And we found that phone calls are one of the best ways to communicate, or a handwritten letter. Emails work too, although legislators certainly get a lot of emails. So something that's personal, a handwritten letter or a phone call, really shows them that you care about issues enough to try and get in touch with them.
Now, if a citizen makes a phone call to the office, say in their district, of their representative or their senator, they're probably not going to get them answering the phone. What do they do when someone else answers the phone?
Well, I think that happens to me a lot, too, and I will sometimes leave a message, especially if I am calling about a particular piece of legislation. I'll tell the individual answering the phone, you know, what the bill number is and what my position on it is, whether I'm supporting or opposing it. But also you can check and see if your senator or representative has office hours or when they're in the office next to have a conversation with them. It's really typical for legislators to say, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays from 12 to 4, I'm here in the office to take visits or phone calls. Or you can just request that they call you back, and sometimes that takes a little while, but many of them will do that. They're really good about communicating with constituents who live in their district. So I think it's always helpful to ask.
And does it make a difference when you call if you say, I'm in a church study group, and we've been working on this issue, and here's what several of us in my congregation feel is the right thing to do on this issue, on this bill. Does that add to the impact?
I would say definitely. I think, you know, when we go out and talk with folks in churches and with members of congregations, I mean, for us, working on these issues really is about our faith. I see it as part of my spiritual work and part of my spiritual journey to be involved in social justice work. And so, you know, calling and saying, I think this is the right thing to do, and the reason I feel that way is because my faith compels me to, is an important message. It's good to let your legislators know why it is that you feel certain ways about, you know, whatever it is that you're calling about, and to let them know that you've had discussions, that you've thought about the issue, and that you've talked about it with other folks in the community. I think all of that is important.
I can remember that the Apostle Paul once wrote to a young follower, Timothy, let no one despise your youth. Do you find that being 25 is a hindrance when you're talking to someone who's been in the legislature maybe as long as you've been alive?
I think that sometimes, I think sometimes it can be a hindrance, but not one that lasts very long. I think the first time I ever went down to Springfield and spoke with, it was a representative about an environmental bill that we were working on, and I was so nervous, and I'm sure that I looked less than 25. I'm sure I looked, like I was 18 and was really nervous, and but at some point, you're communicating with another individual, and a lot of what we do is education work. So when I know about an issue, it's easy to go in and talk about it with legislators. And yes, I look a little bit young, and I am a little bit young, but I don't think it ever has a long-lasting effect on whether they'll listen and engage in a discussion.
We have another caller, this time on line number one. Yes, from Champaign.
Hi, it's me again.
Oh, you called earlier, yes.
Short. Yes.
Sure, go ahead.
In Faith in Place, we've drawn in Muslims, Jews, Mennonites, and all the different faiths.
Mm-hmm.
Consider or starting another group People of Faith for the common ground?
For the common good, uh-huh.
The common good, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have, like I said, it's something that comes up within our own even internal discussions. And I think for us, it's about working with Protestant communities, but bringing those communities in to work with Jewish organizations and synagogues and Muslim communities and mosques. And we do a lot of work with the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs and the Jewish Federation, the Mosque Foundation, and a number of other groups.
Okay, so, good.
Yeah, we try to be interfaith, even though our particular organization focuses on one group of religious individuals.
Okay, and what's your website again?
It is www.thecommongood.org.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Thanks for the call. And again, our number is 333-9455. If you can dial that within the 217 area code, if it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455 to talk with our guest, Courtney Eccles, ECC, LES, from Protestants for the Common Good. Courtney, what are some of the issues coming up?
Well, I'm glad you asked. One of the biggest issues that we have been working on for probably the last year and a half is related to the Illinois budget and how in the world we're going to get this state out of a $13 billion deficit. So, and I guess, we're probably a bit more progressive on this issue as well, but we have been working with an extremely large coalition called the Responsible Budget Coalition. It's made up of businesses, human service providers, healthcare groups, educators, some government groups, other faith groups. It's over 200 organizations, and we have been pushing for a response to the budget that includes new revenue, which would come, in our opinion, from a tax increase, but also includes certain necessary reforms and allows the state to pay back the bills that it owes and really close this gigantic deficit that we have. I'm not sure how much folks know about Illinois' budget, but the General Revenue Fund, which is where most of the money that is spent on different things throughout the state comes from, is about $26 billion. It's a little bit less than that this year because of the cuts that were made for the fiscal year 2010 budget. But in the coming year, for fiscal year 2011, we're looking at about $13 billion deficit, which is roughly half of the General Revenue Fund, and that is a really big problem. And so we've been working hard to try and convince legislators that a tax increase has to be part of the solution, which I know is not always popular.
And how do legislators respond when a religious group comes in and says, we really think there needs to be an increase in the income tax?
Well, I think some have responded really favorably, and they think, this is the right thing, and it does have to be done. And others really say, you know, no way, no how, we're not increasing taxes during this poor economic time. And we've also certainly had legislators and others say, you know, why are religious groups talking about tax increases? But for us, this is really about the fact that the state does need new revenue, and even if you were to get rid of every little bit of waste that exists, you're still not going to get $13 billion. And so we see this as an opportunity to fund some really important and absolutely necessary programs, like our education system, the human services and support systems that are set up throughout the state, public safety, health care. All of, you know, the state owes money to almost all organizations in all those different areas, and so we think it's really important to fund those systems adequately.
Is this a moral issue for you?
Yeah, it is. I'm actually taking classes right now while also working, and I just recently took a class all about budgets, actually. And what they said in that class is that budgets are a statement about a state or a city's priorities. And so for us at PCG, that's a moral statement. I mean, the way we lay out a budget and what we choose to fund and what we choose to pay or not pay is a moral statement about what it is that we as a state and as a society value. And so for us, human service agencies and businesses that, you know, provide home support for the elderly, that provide services for the mentally disabled, for the physically disabled, for low-income communities and individuals and families, those are all programs and services that really need to be provided. So for us, it's a moral issue about what we are going to fund and what we are going to support here in Illinois.
The time you spend in Springfield, many people throughout the state of Illinois are somewhat skeptical of how that place works. Illinois has such a history of corruption in general. We've had, you know, past couple governors either in jail or about to go there.
Mm-hmm.
The moral climate in Springfield has not been known to be very high. How have you experienced it personally?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, I've never done political or advocacy work in another state. So people, I always joke with people about, oh, you know, in Illinois we always keep things interesting. I think that sometimes it is difficult because the political process, and I don't think this is unique to Illinois. I think this is everywhere. But the political process is difficult. It's slow and it's tedious, and you can start off with a wonderful idea and a wonderful vision, and in order to actually make that come to fruition, it gets pared down into smaller and smaller pieces, and you have to compromise. And I think that can sometimes be really frustrating for those who aren't working within that system, who aren't used to having to do all of that. And yeah, there's been corruption and I don't think that's unique to Illinois either. I think somehow it's more public here, I guess. But I would say that I have had the privilege of working with so many other groups in Springfield, so many other advocates, and with a lot of our legislators, representatives and senators. And I think that people do want to do the right thing. I really believe that, because if I didn't, I don't think I'd be able to do this kind of work. And I think that there's never, there's very rarely a unanimous idea about something and what needs to be done. And so sometimes you're going to have folks who really support the work you're doing, and sometimes you're going to have folks who don't. But I think people, for the most part, are trying to do the right thing. And while it is sometimes easy to get discouraged about what happens, then you witness something like the civil unions bill passing, and you think to yourself, wait, we still are doing good work here, and we're still making big differences. So it's those kind of successes that really keep you going, I guess.
As you look ahead, working on with the Responsible Budget Coalition on trying to do something about this horrible state deficit here in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
Do you find that legislators are still mainly concerned about their own reelections? And will I be reelected if I vote for a tax increase?
I think that's a really good question. Certainly, that is what we ran into last spring. I mean, we were really hopeful in January and February and March of 2010 that something was going to happen, and it didn't. We worked really hard for months speaking with legislators, organizing people throughout the state to make phone calls, to do visits, to write letters, and I think it became clear to us at some point that there were going to be too many people worried about their reelection in November. And I think that actually we're kind of at a unique time right now. We're just after the last election, so we're about as far from the next election as you can be. And I think even more importantly, you know, you could make excuses last year about funding and how we can put things off, but I don't think we can put off doing something about this deficit anymore. And I think our legislators are really starting to realize that. And I think there were some who were worried about the election that made it through okay and now are going to be brave enough and in a position where they're going to do the right thing. And that's really what we're hoping for. But for folks who are worried about the budget issues, I would say that the next month and a half is going to be just crucial. Make phone calls to your representatives, to your senators, and let them know that you, you'll support them if they vote for new revenue, because you know that's what has to be done. I think that's what they need to hear, just more and more from their constituents.
Do people in Illinois pay a much higher total taxes than people in other states already?
No, not when it comes to our income tax. Illinois has a 3% flat tax, and it's actually written into the Constitution that it's a flat tax, and that's
Tell us what a flat tax is.
Meaning that everyone pays 3%
regardless of income.
Right, as opposed to other states which have a progressive income tax, it's called, where it would be tiered. So depending on your income level, you might pay 0% or 2% or 5 or 8 or what have you. And if you actually look at the states surrounding us, I mean, Wisconsin, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, their income taxes are all higher than ours. I think Indiana is the closest to ours, but don't quote me on that. So raising our income tax, a 1 or 2 percentage points isn't going to put Illinois over the top by any means.
So it won't put us, Illinois people or corporations or companies, at a disadvantage in terms of
right. People
wanting to go across the state line to set up a business.
Right. And there's a lot of research and information that has been done out there. If folks would really like to know the numbers behind it, I would suggest they visit the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, their website. You can look them up online. They have done phenomenal research in the past few years and even very recently on our budget, the numbers, what we're spending our money on. They've done a lot of work on these ideas of waste and fraud, and they've also taken a really good look at Illinois' tax system and how it compares to the states around us and the country as a whole. So they've
got that's Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, and we did have the executive director of that organization on Keeping the Faith in the past. If you'd like to put that in the search engine on WILL's website for AM, you can hear an hour interview with him talking about this same issue. Courtney, we're getting close to the end of our time here. Tell our listeners how, if they want to be involved in this issue on the budget issue in the state of Illinois, if they feel like they don't know the numbers, they don't know all that kind of thing, what can Protestants for the Common Good provide for them to help them make a good contact with our legislator?
Well, what I would say is, if this is something that you're concerned about as an individual or something that you think folks in your church might be interested in, we would love to come and do a presentation or put together some information and give it out. We've done that over the past year. We've done a number of workshops and sort of adult education hours on Illinois' budget and how we're spending money and what it looks like. And it's something that we've really loved to do over the past year, because I think education is a big part of what people need to know when it comes to the budget. So give us a call here, and even if it's, you know, even if your church is located really far away from Chicago and we can't make the trip in the coming weeks, we've actually put together a number of really great resources that we would happily send out to folks to use within their own churches or within community groups, or we can put you in touch with organizations in your area, because we're connected with a lot of different folks around the state. So if it's something you're interested in working on or learning more about, please call us. We've got information and resources that we're happy to share.
And in terms of contacting Protestants for the Common Good in Chicago, there are several ways to do that. We've mentioned their website, thecommongood.org. Their phone number I will give now, but I'll warn listeners, it's very close to the WILL phone number, the last four numbers. So listen carefully, 312-223-9544. So that's for the Common Good in Chicago, if you want to phone them and talk to one of the staff people there, 312-223-9544. And Courtney, if people want to email you at your office, that would be Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y, at thecommongood.org. Is that correct?
That is perfect, yes.
Great. All right. Well, we're down to our last minute. Any last words, things that I or our callers have not asked you, information you want to share?
Well, I would just say first that I really enjoyed having the opportunity to talk with you about our organization. And I guess my last pitch is just definitely look us up online, give us a call, email me. We are always excited to come out and talk at churches. And for folks who have thought about any of these issues or have thought about getting engaged, I think it's so important to get to know your legislators, your representative, and your senator. They are just regular people too, and they really appreciate hearing from their constituents about different issues. And half the time, you'll know more about the issues than they will, and educating them is a great way to be involved. So I just I encourage folks to get involved, to learn about the issues, and to get in touch with us if you'd like to work with PCG on anything.
Thank you very much. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'm happy to say again that I have been on the board of Protestants for the Common Good for the last few years, and have been pleased with the kind of work that they do. Local people may contact me if they would like more information about the organization. Again, I'm Steve Shoemaker, usual host for this program. Our guest today has been Courtney Eccles from Protestants for the Common Good, whose offices are in Chicago. Next week here on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking via long-distance telephone call to Durham, England, with the author Francis Larson, author of a fascinating new book called The Infinity and Infinity of Things, How Sir Henry Welcome Collected the World. That will be here on Keeping the Faith next week. The following week, From Fashion Design to the Pulpit with Joanne Fong. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.